Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Oh, let go nicely by Lavelle. Right side cross. Done! Go! It is press on it.
USA, USA, USA.
Good morning. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. The producer extraordinaire, Cody Schutz, is on the ones and twos. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air sports coverage 24 hours a day. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to, you can feel free to give us a call on our co-equipment hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Just a few days before the 4th of July, Team USA in the Women's World Cup in France, takes on England, pulls out the 2-1 victory to advance to the championship match for the Women's World Cup. They did that without one of their best scorers, who apparently tweaked a hamstring and had to miss the entire match. They took an early 1-0 lead at the 10-minute mark, but then Ellen White, England's best player, or one of their best players, stepped up and scored a goal of her own at the 19-minute mark, and this was a tight match throughout. But then Alex Morgan, on her 30th birthday, scores a goal at the 31-minute mark to take the lead for good, and then things just kind of came off the rails for the English team at the end there. They're down by one goal. They're fighting, they're scrapping, they're exerting all this energy to try to tie the game. They appeared to have done so, but then replay shows, no, you're offsides, take a goal off the board. They never really recovered after that. They had the penalty kick. The U.S. goalie defended that. That was phenomenal. I mean, that was crazy good. And then England towards the end, a couple yellow cards. Millie Bright in the 86th minute got a red card. And just like that, Team USA advances to the championship match of the World Cup. I have to ask just how subtle and awesome was Alex Morgan's celebration, where she pulled up the subtle, pinky finger.
Subtle's not the word. I don't know where you got subtle from.
That was
me being more facetious. That's more of a, hey, England, look over here. And then she does the yeah.
All that noise about the excessive celebration. They'd been kind of quiet. Remember that all the excessive celebration about the 13 goals and the opener for the World Cup for the U.S. women's team. And they've been kind of quiet since then with the celebrations, not with the people talking, not with the members of the team talking to the media on a international scale. But Alex Morgan does the little dainty, I'm drinking tea, and she held up the pinky while drinking her imaginary little cup of tea. Gangster. Just absolutely gangster. And I loved every minute of it. And not just because I'm an American and we got the 4th of July holiday upon us, but it's always better for me. Isn't it always better when Team USA on a grand stage is a little cocky and kind of pisses off everyone else? Isn't that a little better to have that? I remember watching Team USA, the men's basketball team, when they came together. The dream team, 92 Olympics in Barcelona. They did some flashy stuff. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, John Stockton, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley. The greatest collection of basketball talent ever put together. They ran up the score on those poor international teams. They were throwing alley-oops. They were doing dunks. They were shooting unnecessary three-pointers. People kind of hated them for it in some countries. But we also saw how a country like Spain, which hosted the Olympics that year and inspired an entire generation of basketball players, and now Spain is known as one of the best worldwide, or one of the best countries in the world for basketball. It took a while.
Maybe tops in Europe.
Right.
It really might be.
That might be. So I don't want to hear any nonsense about the U.S. women's national team. That they're cocky. Yeah, the world doesn't like them. That's fine. The world doesn't have to like. Their objective is to go out there to dominate and win the World Cup. They're not there to make friends.
I'll put it to you this way, and even to keep it in the terms of soccer, do I like and root for, and like, man, those guys seem cool when I am discussing or watching the German men's soccer team? No. Those guys are a bunch of you-know-whats, and they seem very arrogant and cocky to me, and when they play the United States men's team, they wipe the floor with them, and yeah, I'm angry, but, I mean, that doesn't mean that they can't do their thing. Like, if Germany is that good and wants to talk a little smack, yeah, it can make me mad as a U.S. team, but they still, I mean, they're the best team in the world. They can kind of do what they want.
I go back to this again and again. If you don't want the other team to celebrate, if you don't want the other team to show you up, then beat them. It's very simple. This is competition. It's not fair. It's not balanced. You know, this is not, hey, afterwards we're all going to hug each other and have a group therapy session and tell each other that we're all beautiful and unique snowflakes. No. This is competition, damn it. There's winners and there's losers. And if you don't like how the other team beats you, you don't like how the other team behaves on the field of play, whatever that might be, a basketball court, a volleyball court, a football field, a soccer pitch, whatever it is, then don't let them beat you. Be better than them and beat them. It's very simple. Very simple. Back in the day, in the heyday of the physical era of the NBA, what happened? Michael Jordan was a flashy player, even in his youth. He was known for being brash. He was known for being flashy, for sticking out the tongue while on the dunk, while staring down the competition, coming back down the court. He did all that stuff early on in his career, too. Back before the Bulls became a dynasty when they added Phil Jackson and obviously drafted Scottie Pippen. And then added the complimentary pieces like Paxson and Steve Kerr and Years and Horace Grant and everything like that. Michael Jordan was a brash guy. He felt that he was one of the best in the NBA. He felt that he was an absolute stud out there and that no one could hang with him. And what did the other cats in the NBA at that time do? They beat him. You want to go off for 60 against us in the playoffs? That's great. Boston Celtics still won that series. Because Boston was the better team. And they weren't going to allow someone to show them up. The bad boy Pistons had the Jordan rules. Okay, Michael Jordan, you're boastful. You believe that you're the best player on the planet. You like to talk an immense amount of trash on the court, and Jordan talked more trash than anyone and loved talking trash. Okay, every time you come near the basket, we're going to foul you and make you hit the floor every single time. So much so that Jordan and the Bulls couldn't get past the Pistons until Michael Jordan changed his offseason regimen, got stronger, faster, and more mentally strong, and he was determined because he couldn't get past the Pistons that they had to break through and get past the Pistons, and when they did so, they started winning NBA championships. But Jordan was brash and cocky. The rest of the team, the rest of the league said, no, we don't care that you may be the best player on the planet. We're going to stop you, and we're going to do whatever we can to stop you and beat you. And then Jordan had to turn around and do the same thing to those teams because he couldn't get past them, because he couldn't make a deep run in the Eastern Conference playoffs because of the Detroit Pistons, and before then the Boston Celtics.
I look at it this way.
Beat them. If you don't want them to celebrate, you don't want them to talk trash, you play the athletic contest in front of you, beat them.
Now,
very simple.
I'm gonna try to frame it like this because we might not all be soccer fans, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the vast, vast, vast majority of us are football fans.
Yes.
Just a few years ago, a handful or so years ago, the NFL was being called by its fans and me, myself, as well, the No Fun League. No celebrating in the end zone. That's a 15-yard penalty if you celebrate your touchdown. And fans were up in arms, completely irate. Oh, let these guys have fun. They're out there, you know, playing a game that they love. When they score a touchdown, let them have fun. Let them celebrate. That's a moment for them. Let them, when they score, have fun. Don't throw a flag and put a wet blanket on their party. But for some reason, when the U.S. women's soccer team celebrates their goals or quote-unquote touchdowns, we're trying to put that fire out with, not we, I don't mean to blanket everyone, but there are a certain collective of vocal people that are trying to put that fire out immediately. I don't understand why, and I do understand why. Let me not play dumb. It's just American culture is why, but we're calling for more celebration and more boastfulness and cockiness and braggadociousness from football players, but we're telling these female soccer players to more or less like know your place and be good. And that is where I think is
we
the
have
disconnect.
We have a huge issue in this country with female athletes being outspoken and being bragging and being cocky.
It
rubs us. Serena Williams has been rubbing people the wrong way for nearly 20 years.
And the thing is, it doesn't help that her specific, this is tennis and soccer we're talking about, two sports that America has devalued for whatever reason.
That's another fair point. Okay.
No, we're unlike the rest of the world. We have devalued these two sports, and that's fine. I mean, to each their own. I love football more than soccer. I'm not trying to say that, but I do still love soccer. Just, I think the majority of America, and America's coming around to soccer. Don't get me wrong. It's more popular now than it's probably ever been. That's not saying much, I know, but that's where we're at. It's just,
it's slowly taking root.
There's a double standard here, which isn't necessarily surprising.
No, it's absolutely not surprising, and you touch on a bigger thing, because if this was the men's national team, just imagine the men's national team actually advancing to a World Cup final. That's woo! If that happens in my lifetime, I have no idea. I have no idea what I would do.
By the way, I do want to say, I told you to keep an eye out for one Rose Lavelle, if you remember the name I brought up.
Correct.
In the first half of the game and the first like 20-ish or so minutes of the second half, she was the best player on the field. Now, that has something to do with because Megan Rapinoe didn't play. If Rapinoe would have played, she would have been the best player on the field most likely. But Rose Lavelle, best player on the field until she got hurt. She got banged up. She hit the deck. The training staff came out, and the camera caught the perfect shot. You could read her lips. She went, "It's my hamstring." So Rose Lavelle may or may not be available for that final on Sunday. We'll see.
And when the team needed her to step up the most, Alex Morgan did that, just that.
Right.
After disappearing for a little while in a couple of those matches.
Since Thailand, I don't think she scored a goal. She scored five on them and then hasn't scored since. Now she's back in first place for the
Golden Boot,
Golden
right?
Golden Boot, yeah.
But congratulations.
It was a fun soccer game. They said it at the end of the game that this was a very good clinic for a new soccer fan who's like, yeah, I'll sit down and watch a game. It had a little bit of everything from a penalty kick to, you know, a double yellow for a red card to a replay review being overturned to, you know, headers from across the field. It had a little bit of everything in this game. It's a good, fun game to watch. 90 minutes goes by like that.
And a tremendous celebration.
Yes. High tea.
Oh, high tea.
I guess if you were to do that, like, if England were to score and do that, would they, like, run in the corner and, like, crack a beer open? Like, what would... I'm trying to think of what you would do against America.
Oh, nice.
USA
nice.
All the way.
Oh, we got to hit a break, but we'll keep the World Cup talk moving forward in our next segment. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We start off today's show talking Women's World Cup. USA, USA, USA. They pull out the 2-1 victory over England. They advance to the World Cup final, where they will face the winner of the Netherlands versus Sweden match, the other semifinal. Reminder, the Team USA has already defeated Sweden in the group stage of this World Cup, and the Netherlands is a team that's playing hotter than anyone right now, with the exception of Team USA. Team USA star is expected to be fit for the final. Cody, I will ask you if Miss Megan being out with a hamstring injury, they were able to overcome that in the semifinals. How much do they need her in the finals, regardless of who their opponent is?
They don't need her. They don't need her at all. Will she make the team that much better? Absolutely. She's probably their best player. She's, especially when the United States are attacking, when they're in the third of the field that is closest to their opponent's goal, that is really where Megan Rapinoe shines. That's where her moments are really, really good. She's got something about her. She can take a ball from 30 to 40 yards, and not every time, but pretty consistently put it right on a spot. And that's what you need from, you know, your midfielder or your winger that is going to be distributing the ball out in a soccer game. So do they need her? No. We saw that yesterday, if you did watch the game, that, yeah, maybe Rapinoe was a little missed out there in spurts in that game against England. But, you know, for the most part, overall, they next man up, if you will, and they filled in for her quite well. And they didn't really miss her that much. I think if Rapinoe plays yesterday, at best, maybe you get one more goal, which one more goal is a big deal. But I don't think it makes it a huge... It's not like they win 6-1 if Megan Rapinoe plays yesterday.
And that leads me to my bigger point about the U.S. Women's National Team. And this is the huge difference between the Women's National Team and the Men's National Team. Is the amount of quality depth in the next man up mentality of where women's soccer is in our country. They lost two heroes from the last World Cup that aren't playing on this team. Amy Wambach is the all-time leading scorer for the U.S. Women's National Team, if I am correct there, Cody.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Maybe Mia Hamm. I'll check, but I'm pretty sure it's Abby. Pretty sure.
I think it's Abby. Hope Solo, it was a tremendous goalkeeper. Despite all the off-the-field issues, she was a tremendous goalkeeper for this Women's National Team. Neither are on the team this year. They've aged out. They've retired. and they're not missing a beat whatsoever. Alex Morgan disappeared. She got kind of banged up throughout this World Cup after the opener where she scored 5 goals. Doesn't matter. Megan misses yesterday. She's become the face of this team. She's become their best player. You just heard Cody say she is probably their best player. She did not play yesterday. They didn't even miss her. And Cody's sitting here telling you if she doesn't play in the final, it really doesn't matter. Because they have someone already lined up that is just as good or maybe even better, ready to take her place and willing to play the backup role until it's their time to be the face of the U.S. Women's National Team. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the difference between women's soccer in our country and men's soccer. That's the women's national team develops the homegrown talent. They bring them up through the youth ranks to college and then to the World Cup and the World Championships. Former stars retire, age out of the system. There's another wave just ready to go and to become the face of the women's national team. The men's team does not have that. The men's team tries everything they can. Hire a coach they have already fired, bring him back. That doesn't work. Let's go hire us a German. How'd that work out? Didn't. Okay? Klinsmann knew what he was doing and was very well respected in Germany and in Europe for being a soccer savant.
They even hired one of the best players on the team's dad. And that didn't work.
The men's national team, the state of soccer for Team USA on the men's side is a bit of a mess.
There is a light at the end of that tunnel, though, and his name is Christian Pulisic. The dude can play. I've been watching the last two games I've watched. He's the best American soccer player right now. And he's young. I think he's only 20 or something like that. Maybe 21, something. He's
a great player. But you need three of him or four of him, right?
Right.
And that's where the women's team has, they have a whole platoon of players that are just ready to go. The men's national team is at that one guy.
Right.
It always has that one guy, maybe two, right?
But he plays for Chelsea. He's the first American to play for Chelsea.
The men's team had the two when they had the great goalkeeper and they had the guy who wanted to be a rapper out of Dallas.
Oh, God.
Okay. That doesn't get it done. You need more. We got to hit a break. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, there was a prayer service and rosary service held at Russo Park last night for longtime head baseball coach Tony Robichaux. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Last night, there was a prayer vigil and a rosary held at Russo Park for longtime UL baseball coach Tony Robichaux. It's been a few weeks since Tony, Coach Robe, had a heart attack. They had a surgery the following day right here locally at Lafayette General. But then last week it was released that he had to be admitted down at Ochsner's in New Orleans, and they've had yet a second surgery due to the heart attack that occurred a few weeks ago. Tony just wrapped up his 25th season at the helm of the Raging Cajuns baseball program. He's one of the most well-respected, well-liked, and beloved figures in the area. And hundreds of fans and well-wishers showed up last night there at Russo Park for a ceremony that was very much encompassed everything that Coach Robe is about. He's always preached baseball, family, friends, and God. And that very much was what was on hand last night inside Russo Park. Hundreds showed up. Father Bryce Sibley of Our Lady of Wisdom Catholic Church and Pastor Jacob Osrana of Our Savior's Church held the prayer vigil for Coach Robichaux. Once again, Robe is currently in the intensive care unit at Ochsner Medical Center in New Orleans after he's had not one but two heart surgeries following a heart attack that occurred a few weeks ago. He remains in critical condition. Former UL player and longtime friend of Robe's, Ken Myers, began the event. Said, quote, "People care, and you've got a head coach who is a legend in this area," end quote. He went on to further say, quote, "You've got a rich Catholic tradition. Coach Robichaux is a strong, devout Catholic. So a group of us guys just decided, hey, man, let's go public with this thing, and we had a great turnout." Of course, you know good and well Coach Robe wouldn't have signed off on this because that's just not how he is. But this tells you how much he means to his inner circle, his family, his friends, his assistant coaches, the people at UL, the baseball fans, local business leaders. It doesn't matter. They all came out to show their support. They had the rosary. Sibley prayed the rosary from the seats there inside Russo Park. And then Aranza prayed near home plate, where he loudly requested, quote, "Heal our coach and bring him back home. Heal our coach and bring him back home." UL Director of Athletics Brian Maggard was on hand as well. And he said he looked forward to the day where Coach Robe can resume his duties as the Cajuns head baseball coach. Quote, "That's our hope, that he gets back on his feet, but we're going to take it one step at a time. First and foremost is just getting him back up on his feet. I'm personally committed to this, and I know he will, and Colleen and his family, that his health is going to be his number one priority moving forward. That has to be the case, but we do very much look forward to getting him back here to our family," end quote. When asked about an update on Coach Robe's condition last night, Maggard said there's no real update. Quote, "There's really not. He still remains in critical condition. He's in a fight. We know that. Continued prayer is much requested and appreciated by the family," end quote. So, tremendous turnout last night for one of the best coaches, not only in the area, but in the state of Louisiana, in the entire region. And we talked about how the reaction to the two surgeries, the heart attack and then the ensuing two surgeries, has been felt by his former players who have reached out through social media, Jonathan Lucroy has talked about it via social media, as have several other players. And when you see hundreds of people show up for a prayer vigil and rosary, and look, I understand that we live in a very religious portion of the country. Religion is very important. Faith is very important to people here in South Louisiana and people in Louisiana in general. But people also are very jaded these days. And to see hundreds of people come out and go to the ballpark that Coach Robe calls home and to pray for him, I don't know. It should fill your heart up. You should be impressed by the fact that the community in general showed up for that. And I'll say this, if you couldn't go to the prayer vigil last night, you couldn't take part in it, that doesn't mean that you can't not pray for Coach Robe and that your prayers won't be valued and appreciated and needed in this time, because it's a scary situation. He's a fighter. He's going to fight, but he's had a heart attack, and he's had not one, now two surgeries since then, and he remains in critical condition. You know, this isn't like those heart attacks you see when it happens on the sitcom, your favorite sitcom, where the dad has a heart attack and then a couple of days later he's released from the hospital and he's back at home and he's, you know, playfully fighting with his wife to be able to let him cut the grass outside. Okay, this is not what this is. This is in a significant, serious, even dire situation. The man is in critical condition still down at Ochsner's in New Orleans. So your thoughts, your prayers, your well wishes are needed. So please make sure to do that. Cody, you're a UL alum. It's where you received your degree. I know you've been out there and you've covered baseball a little bit. You know of Coach Robe. I don't know if you have ever had an interaction with him.
I met him twice, I think.
When you see the community here locally come out that way for our prayer service, it's 2019. Sometimes prayer is not exactly cool nowadays, but to see hundreds of people show up for a prayer service and a vigil and a rosary for Coach Robe, who's battling in critical condition in a hospital room down in New Orleans, how does that make you feel?
I mean, these are the stories that, kind of like what you said, these are the stories we want more of in our news cycle, if you will. Things get filtered in and out so fast that a story like this forces you to stop and slow down, because something like this doesn't happen fast. We're so used to news coming in and then going out and then coming in and then going out, you know, less than a 24-hour cycle now. This has been going on for, you know, the better half of a week.
It's almost two. It'll be 2 weeks Sunday.
It'll be 2 weeks on Sunday. Wow. So
2 weeks. It'll be 2 weeks Sunday since he's had the heart attack.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, that just shows you what, and to go along with what you said about how many people coming out to the ballpark for a cause like this, it shows you that Lafayette may be a, you know, in air quotes, a big-ish city, but it's still a very small and tight-knit community here in,
yes,
Lafayette. And that's proof right there in that, you know, you can leave Lafayette, you can leave UL, and, you know, your jersey or whatever may not say Raging Cajuns anymore, but you always have that connection back here, and that is shown by Luke Roy and other former Cajuns reaching out with their support. I mean, I've been part of one of those, you know, like you said, kind of sitcom heart attack scares, if you will. My wife's dad, before we were married, I don't think you had quite started working here yet. And I was sitting in the front office one day and got a phone call from, she was my fiance at the time. And, you know, I never get a phone call from her in the middle of the day. It's always a text message, if anything. So I answer the phone and she's freaking out. And she said, you know, pretty sure my dad just had a heart attack. You know, I'm rushing to the hospital. I don't know what to do, this and that. And, you know,
that's
okay,
scary.
Right. And I was like, okay, I'm coming. I was like, I'll get there. Before I could even get to the hospital, I got another call from her that, you know, yeah, it was this minor, you know, chest deal, but it wasn't anything super serious. And he was home the next day. And like you said, it was fine. It wasn't a big deal. I know how that felt for, you know, me and especially my wife and her family. And just in those few hours of worry, I can't imagine having to live with this and it being a real threat. But we do know one thing, if anything, about Coach Robichaud, is that he walks the walk. He doesn't just talk the talk.
Yeah.
With the things that he says and he tries to teach and the things he preaches to his team, his players, and the community in general, those aren't just words. Coach Robichaud lives by those thoughts and those beliefs. And I think that's going to go a long way into his recovery here. And I expect to see Coach Robichaud, you know, when he's healthy again, I expect to see him back out there and using this experience in his life as yet just another teaching moment and foundation piece to help other people in their life. So,
and you talk about, regardless of what kind of heart attack your loved one may have had, it can be very scary. I was living with my grandparents at the time years ago, and my grandfather had a heart attack. We took him to the hospital. He had to have emergency quintuple bypass surgery.
That's five, right?
Yes. Okay. Doctors came in, went to my poor old German grandmother and said,
"Little Weyman.
Yes, Mrs. Parch, your husband's going to be fine. It's going to take weeks for him to get better. He's never going to be as strong as he once was. We've had to do the bypass surgery. We don't understand why your husband didn't die 20 years ago. Like, you know, and me and my father rotated sleeping up at the hospital for a period of about 2.5 weeks because my grandmother didn't want her husband to be alone, right? Up at the so it is not a quick, or, you know, it's not something that you can quickly get over, and Tony's going to need to go through immense amounts of rehab, but he is a fighter. The other thing that this shows me, when you do any stories, the last time I did something like this, when I wrote the story on O'Neal Lockridge, the former STM star who began his career at LSU and is now with the Cajuns, and there was things that he told me in the interview that stood out to me, and he goes, when I talked to O'Neal, he's like, "I've learned so much from that man. I've learned so much on how to be a man." And when you talk to his players, they don't even mention baseball, Cody. They don't. They mention what life lessons they learned from Coach Robe concerning being a man and doing things the right way. You can have conversations with his former players, even his current players right now, but with his former players, and they will all tell you about how much Coach Robe helped them become men. They will spend the majority of their conversation with you not even talking about baseball. And that's where Coach Robe is at his best. And that's what he's always preached. He's preached about his faith. He talks about his faith. He's very open about his faith. Sometimes that rubs people the wrong way. It doesn't me. Okay? He's a straight shooter. He talks about his faith. He talks about the life lessons he instills in these young boys to make them men. And that's why you're seeing the outpouring of support. Because Tony is a straight shooter. He is what he is. He's not going to shy away from it. And he holds himself, and he holds his team, and he holds those young boys who he turns into men to a certain level, to certain values that not all coaches do. Regardless of what the sport is, not everyone does that. Not everyone runs their program and has the mindset of taking that certain approach of coaching like Robe does. And that's why you're seeing hundreds of people show up at Russo Park for a prayer vigil. And that's why you're seeing outpouring of support all over social media from former players. And you hear former players talk about the impact Coach Robe had on them. And those include star players, and those includes guys that were bench players for him for 4 years that are now in the private sector. It doesn't matter. He's made a huge impact in his 25 years right here in Lafayette. So we will do our part and make sure to send out our prayers and our well wishes here from 103.7 The Game to Coach Robe and his family.
And it goes without saying, get well soon.
Get well soon.
Goes without saying.
Speedy recovery for Coach. We'll talk more about the scene last night at Russo Park in hour number three when we welcome on KLFY Sports Director George Faust, who was there covering the event. We'll get his insight on that, on the prayer vigil for Coach Tony Robichaud later in today's show. But we got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number one right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage, free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline today, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Another hire to get to, though. Yesterday we talked in depth about the LSU football team adding a college football Hall of Famer a national champion, a man who coached not one but two Heisman Trophy winners, and then also turned around and had a lengthy career as a head coach in the NFL, including reaching two conference championship games. As we talked about, John Robinson being added to Coach Ed Orgeron's staff as a special consultant. Well, basketball team has added a coach as well. Will Wade, the men's basketball coach, has added Kevin Nickelberry to his support staff. Nickelberry is the former Howard head coach. He will be an assistant to Will Wade, the university announced on Tuesday. Nickelberry spent 9 years at Howard and helped the Bison reach the College Basketball Invitational this past season, but was forced to resign following the conclusion of the season. Previously, before then, Nickelberry worked as an assistant in a Power 5 conference at Clemson from 2003 to 2006, when Wade was also a student manager there. Nickelberry accepted the head coaching job at Hampton University before moving on to Howard. So he's been a head coach at two previous stops, Hampton and Howard. He was an assistant there at Clemson, so he's got Power 5 experience as well. Wade said this in a press release, quote, "We're very happy to have Kevin Nickelberry join our basketball staff here at LSU. I've been friends with him for some 15 years, and I know that he will be a tremendous mentor and resource for our players with his years of college basketball experience." Nickelberry joins LSU as a member of his support staff after the departure of coordinator basketball operations Brian Merritt left for Morgan State, and Tasman Mitchell was elevated to a full-time assistant coach after Tony Benford accepted a job at TCU. Nickelberry had this to say in a release, quote, "I'm excited to get back to a Power 5 conference and to join the LSU basketball program," end quote. So LSU making some moves with the basketball staff. That'll do it for hour number one. Hour number two coming up, baseball talk on deck right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me thanks draft or two, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Here's the 0-1.
And he rips this one. Deep to left field, it is gone! Gurriel's second home run of the ball game gives the Astros the lead. It's 9-8.
Welcome to hour number two, RP3 and Company, here on this Wednesday edition, 4th of July Eve edition of RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We'll talk a little bit more about the Astros' thrilling slugfest victory over the Colorado Rockies on the road here in a minute. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up at 7:32 from the Lima Time Time podcast, our good friend James Yasko will be joining us to break down all things Astros. And while I have plenty of positive things to talk about, as the Astros picked up their fourth straight victory last night, you heard it there in the clip, 9-8. They get win number 54 on the year. They take down the the Rockies, and it was a slugfest. The two teams combined for 27 hits and 17 runs. Boy, you got to love playing at Coors Field in Denver. The ball just travels. The Astros were able to overcome the Rockies scoring 5 runs in one inning. The Rockies plated 5 in the bottom of the 5th, and that gave them a 7-5. Let's just listen to that for a second. 5 runs in the bottom of the 5th to give them a 7-5 lead in the 5th inning. Baseball in Denver. And then the Rockies added another run in the bottom of the 6th. But the Astros came up huge there in the top of the 7th, plating 4 runs. And that would be all she wrote, as it was enough to pull out the 9-8 win over the Rockies. And just look at the lineup. It was a good day at the plate for nearly everyone on the roster. Springer Dinger, 3-for-3. Yoel Gurriel, 3 hits, 4 RBIs. Jose Altuve, 4 hits. Boy, that average is creeping up.
A four-hit game will do that.
Yeah, right? A four-hit game will do that. Bregman, Brantley each had a hit as well.
Gurriel, two of those hits were home runs, right?
Yes.
Yeah, plus the go-ahead home run in the 7th. Have a day, yo Cuban B.
it was pretty phenomenal day for him just to go out there and just kind of ridiculous how well this lineup can be. I mean, Altuve 4-for-5. Springer, I'm sorry, was 3-for-5. Bregman, Brantley both got hits. You're right about Yuli. He had 3 hits and 5 plate appearances, 4 ribbies. And they were able to overcome poor pitching, because the pitching was, let's be honest, a little awful yesterday for the Stros. Once again, the ball just sails in Colorado. It's always a challenge for specifically the visiting pitcher, because they're not accustomed to pitching in those elements. And the Astros starter only lasted 3 2/3. 2 earned runs off 6 hits. Josh James came into the game in relief, but he only lasted an inning, a third, because he gave up 4 runs on 3 hits. Ooh. But Will Harris, the former Tiger, came in. He only gave up 1 run on 4 hits, and then they just piecemealed it together with Davinsky and then Presley. Presley going to the All-Star game. And Usuna came in and did not blow a save. So that's a positive thing. The rest of the pitching staff wasn't very good yesterday, but Roberto came in and did his job and didn't, you know, blow a save. So that's positive. But a terrific 9-8 victory. It's a tough place to win at because of the elements, and the Rockies always have a great home field advantage. You know, the Astros threw out Jose Urquidy. He was making his major league debut and was doing so in Coors Field. Not exactly putting the young man in his best possible atmosphere, environment to succeed. Hey, you get your chance on the big show. Guess what? You're pitching in Coors Field. The Rockies were able to load the bases with no outs in consecutive frames, and the Astros' bullpen gave up 6 runs in a span of 3 outs, which enabled the Rockies to flip a 3-run deficit into a 3-run lead. And there were defensive miscues. So the starting pitching young man making his debut, he got shelled. The bullpen got roughed up. They're on the road in Colorado. And then they had defensive miscues on top of it, including Jose Altuve committing a few errors. And yet, in spite of all that, the Astros were still able to pull out a 9-8 victory. As Cody alluded to, Gurriel had the 2 home runs. throughout the game. George Springer, who, by the way, is hitting over 300 in interleague play during his career, led off the game with a single to center. Then he advanced. I love this. Advanced 180 feet on an errant pickoff throw that ricocheted into right field. Bregman, sack, fly, put the Astros on the board in the first. Which is an interesting thing. That's only the third time that's happened in their last 15 games. The Rockies responded. Gurriel hit his first home run there in the second inning, his ninth of the year. And like I said, the Rockies were able to respond, taking the lead there late, adding to the lead as well. But then in the late innings, it went the way of the Astros. When the Rockies inserted reliever Brian Shaw to start the seventh inning, that was a mistake. Because the Astros pulled off three straight doubles. Can you imagine coming into the game? You're like, yeah, my team's got a lead. I get some game action. You run out there. You trot out from the bullpen. You get your warm-up pitches. You're feeling good. It's the home crowd. You're feeling good also because it's Colorado. That'll be a side discussion off the air with Cody. And then you give up three straight doubles. Springer, Altuve, Bregman. That cut the lead down to 8-7, just like that. That double there in the seventh was Altuve's third hit of the night, his second game in a row with three hits. He's starting to heat up, ladies and gentlemen. The former league MVP starting to come around. Jose Altuve now has 142 career three-hit games. That's one better than Hall of Famer Jeff Bagwell, and the second most in franchise history behind Hall of Famer Craig Biggio. That's what we call good company. That's good company. But then the Astros took the lead for good. And that was the clip that we heard coming out of the break when Gurriel hit his second home run of the game. That put the Astros on top 9-8. 10th home run of the season. And he was the fourth of the Astros' last five batters to record extra base hits. That's how good this team is. You think you have them beat. You think you've done what you followed the textbook, right? You have the workbook beside you, and you go through and you hit everything that you're supposed to hit. Rough up the starting pitcher. Send them out. Send them to the showers early. Check. Rough up the bullpen. Multiple pitchers. Make them use every arm they got and still get to them. Have a lead late in the game, at home, in front of your home friends, in an environment and in an atmosphere that you control, that you thrive in. And the Astros are so good that it doesn't matter. That they just got extra base hit after extra base hit after extra base hit to flip a deficit into a lead. And were able to pull out the win. Just like that. Tremendous. The Astros have won 32 of their last 33 and 44 of their last 46 games when Gurriel has an RBI. That's a stupid stat. And I mean that in the best way possible. Once again, the Astros have won 32 of their last 33 games and 44 of their last 46 when Gurriel has an RBI. We talk a lot about Alex Bregman being an MVP candidate. We talk a lot about the addition of Michael Brantley and how he was a steal in free agency, signing him to a two-year deal away from the Cleveland Indians. We talk about the impact George Springer has as the leadoff monster with the home runs, the Springer dingers. We talk about Jose Altuve being the heart and soul of this team and coming back. But doesn't that stat indicate to you that the team MVP very well may be Gurriel? When you hear that, when he gets an RBI, 99% of the time they win their games. Harris, the former LSU Tiger and friend of 103.7 The Game, in particular Bumper to Bumper Sports and Ben Love, picked up the win in relief. He's now 3-1 on the year with an ERA of 1.44. And we talked about Roberto Osuna coming in and not blowing the save opportunity. He picked up his 18th save of the season. The Astros will wrap up their brief two-game stint in Colorado tonight when former Southeastern Lion star Wade Miley, 6-4, 3.39 ERA, takes the mound and will go against Colorado Rockies rookie Peter Lambert. 2-0 on the season, 6.57 ERA. Miley is coming off a game where he had a no decision. That was against the Mariners. So he'll be looking to get on track and get that W tonight. You can listen to Astros at Rockies right here on 103.7 The Game. It'll be Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. We'll have Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6. Five Guys, Stories, and Lies from 6 to 7:10. They're going to lead you right into First Pitch, Astros at Rockies, right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back here on Acadiana Sports Station, we'll talk more baseball. Former LSU Tiger had himself a hell of a day on the mup against the Atlanta Braves yesterday. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
And a fastball on the outside corner called strike three. Six strikeouts for Nola.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. That, ladies and gentlemen, that you heard was Aaron Nola. He was dealing yesterday, the former LSU Tiger. We'll get to what he did here shortly. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. And you can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Coming up at 7:32. We'll talk to our friend from the Lima Time Time podcast, James Yasko. He'll talk all things Astros. But right now, I want to go back and talk a little Aaron Nola. He's the ace of the Philly staff, and he pitched himself a hell of a game in the opener of a set at the Atlanta Braves, who lead the National League East. They did have a lead of five games against the Phillies heading into yesterday's matchup. And Nola just went out there and just was dominant. Eight innings, zero runs, only four hits. That's what we call a good game. That helps narrow the race in the National League East. The former LSU star, the big powerful righty, once again, eight scoreless innings in the 2-0 victory over the Bravos there at SunTrust Park. Nola had complete command of his fastball on both sides of the plate. And many of the beat writers that cover the Philadelphia Phillies say this was his best outing of the season. His fastball was around 96 miles per hour, averaged 94. The Phillies improved to 45-40 on the year and moved 4.5 games now behind the Braves in the National League East. That's what Gabe Kapler, Philadelphia manager, had to say afterwards. Quote, "It feels like we have our ace back," end quote. It was a tremendous outing for Nola, who's been, let's be honest, inconsistent this year since the beginning of the year. But since Nola allowed 5 runs in just 4 1/3 innings of work against the Braves back on June 15th, he's allowed only 1 earned run in 23 innings and 3 starts since. He's also struck out 28 and walked 5 in that span. So it seems that he is reset and that he's turning into the form that turned him into an all-star pitcher and an ace of a team many expect to compete for at least a wild card spot this season, possibly even try to catch the Braves in the NL East standings and win a division title. That's what Nola had to say afterwards, quote, getting my command back. I think my fastball command was the bigger part of that tonight. It felt really good on both sides of the plate, and I think it opened up some other pitches, end quote. The opposition felt the same way. Freddie Freeman had this to say about Nola and his command last night, quote, I didn't see the curveball until my last at-bat, end quote. The Phillies are in desperate need of having someone like Nola step up if they're going to make a run here in the second half of the season. Once again, the All-Star break is coming up after this weekend. The All-Star game is next week. And the Phillies are still trailing in the standings. If they want to make a run, Nola's going to have to return to the form that helped him finish 3rd in the National League Cy Young Award voting last season. Kapler had this to say about his ace. Quote, he's looking really easy on the mound, like it's pretty effortless. I mean, there's a lot of energy going towards the plate. That's a key to his delivery. But in addition to that, it looks like it's coming pretty easily. End quote. And he attacked the Braves' best batters, too, the former LSU star did. Struck out Ronald Acuna Jr., all-star. Had Dansby Swanson fly out. Struck out Freeman looking on a 93-mile-per-hour fastball in the inside corner. And the Phillies were able to get enough runs to win the game and did so against a former Houston Astros star, Dallas Keuchel, who finally signed with the team. He signed with the Braves. The Braves picked him up to help bolster their rotation. But the Phillies were able to score 2 runs, did so in the 4th inning against Keuchel to pull out the win. So, Aaron Nola pitched his best game of the year last night. And it's showing, and it appears in the last 3 weeks or so, his last 3 to 4 starts, he's starting to return to that form that made him a legitimate Cy Young candidate last year. So we'll see if Nola can keep that going in the second half of the season. He might get one more start before the All-Star break. Maybe on Sunday, possibly. But if not, this is a great way to enter the All-Star break for the former LSU Tiger. When you take down the division-leading team that's 5 games ahead of you. And he did so with filth. And it looks like he has command, and it looks like it's easy for him. And once again, Nola looks like the guy that became an all-star and became a legitimate big league ace last year. Rough start to the beginning of the season. Last 3 or 4 starts, though, he looks like he's turned a corner. If he can do that, the Phillies are going to be a dangerous team in the National League. And the Braves will have to keep their eyes on their rival from Philadelphia. We got to hit a break, but more baseball talk is going to be coming up next as we welcome James Yasko from the Lima Time Time podcast. He'll join us talking all things Astros right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell Simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We talked earlier this hour about the Houston Astros able to rally on the road there in the higher elevation of Denver, Colorado, to pull out the 9-8 victory over the Rockies to get to 54 wins on the season. We're going to dive in to all things Astros with our next guest. He joins us every week from the Lima Time Time podcast. It's the one and only James Yasko. James, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, not too bad. How you doing?
I'm doing extremely well. I appreciate you making some time for us, coming on a day early due to the 4th of July holiday.
But, yeah, my schedule's so busy right now. I had to move some things around, but I was happy to accommodate.
James, I want to start off with about the Astros. How happy are you and what you're seeing from how Jose Altuve seems to be swinging the bat as of right now?
I mean, it's great. I mean, he has – I was looking at it this morning. He has 7 hits in his last 10 at-bats. So, you know, I'll take 700, you know, over any sample size. So it's not just him. You know, having Springer and Altuve hitting the way that they are right there at the top of the lineup, Gurriel seems to have found, you know, he's kind of a streaky hitter anyway, but he can't stop hitting home runs. And it's just top to bottom. It seems as though the Astros have kind of weathered that little 7-game blip that they had last week.
You're talking about, you know, Jose Altuve. He seems to be coming to form. Springer seems to be doing the same thing, maybe not the wealth of hits that Altuve has. How important was it to have both of these guys come back and start finding their groove at the plate prior to the All-Star break, James?
It's great. I mean, they set the table for the rest of the lineup. And so, you know, when you've got Bregman coming up and he's got runners on first and third or runners on second and third, it just makes life that much easier. And even in a place like Colorado, you know, you just the way that the Astros hit, I mean, even when they were down last night, I thought, let's just wait and see how this turns out because it's not over by any means. So having those two dudes at the top of the lineup setting the table for everyone else is a really nice problem to create for other teams.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, a stat that I saw that came out last night during the game, Altuve now has 142 career 3-hit games. That's one better than Hall of Famer Jeff Bagwell and the second most in franchise history behind Hall of Famer Craig Biggio. That seems so bizarre to me because it feels like Jose's only been in the league a couple years. I know he hasn't been, but it just feels that way. Are you surprised when you hear that he's already second most in franchise history with the 3-hit games?
I mean, you know, he has all those batting titles. I think, I saw that stat as well. And so I looked up Biggio's stats, and I think I was more surprised. I feel stupid saying I'm surprised by a guy that had that many 3-hit games. He had 3,000 hits, but he's still like 83 3-hit games behind Craig Biggio. And so I think Biggio is sort of, you know, everyone kind of focuses on Bagwell. And, you know, Biggio was a pretty great player in his own right. But I was like, God dang, 225 3-hit games? That's insane. And so it's really cool for Altuve to be kind of working his way up the franchise leaderboard, you know, this early in his career. And he's only really been in the league about, 7 years? I mean, he came up in 2011, but half season. So,
yeah,
you know, to have that many 3-hit games in 7 years is pretty impressive.
James, we've spent a lot of time on this program with myself and then with talking with you. What we focus in a lot on the free agent pickup of Michael Brantley and how great that's been. He's an all-star starter. About Springer Dinger, George Springer. About Altuve. About Alex Bregman being an MVP candidate. But a stat that came up that really intrigued me was that the Astros have won 32 of their last 33 games and 44 of their last 46 when Yuli Gurriel has an RBI. Could you make an argument that he could be considered the team MVP?
I mean, it's possible. You know, what I think Gurriel adds, I don't know how much power you expect from Gurriel, but anytime he gets hits, he's just lengthening that lineup. And so, yeah, I mean, when he hits, it just makes life easier pretty much for everybody because you're getting hits from the bottom half of your order generally. So, you know, I don't know that he's going to get any team MVP votes, but he's certainly – I think there's a sort of a tendency to try to write some players off and kind of look at – you know, because, I mean, when we're looking at Jordan Alvarez and what he's doing, and, you know, you're going to have Correa and Diaz come back. You know, the question is who's going to get left out because someone is going to get left out of that lineup. And the tendency is to look at recent stats and maybe you think Gurriel and then he pops off for a couple homers and he's hit like 5 home runs in the last 8 games or something like that. What he's been able to do within this lineup is pretty impressive.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk a little bit about yesterday's game. The Astros let poor Jose make his Major League Baseball debut, and they do it in Coors Field. Didn't necessarily give him any help there by letting the young man make his debut there in Denver. What did you think of his debut, and what did you think about the middle of the – your relief pitchers, your middle relievers that kind of got roughed up yesterday?
Yeah, it's a tough place to pitch for anybody. And it's not like, you know, Rockies pitchers are exempt from that. And so to make your major league debut in Colorado, that's pretty rough. But, you know, the good thing for him is that he knows he's going to start on Sunday. You know, so it's not like, you know, the Astros told him, like, you better throw a shutout or you're going back to AAA, punk. Like, it's not like they did anything like that. He's going to get another start on Sunday. And you know, so I think the plan was, like, just you're healthy. You've pitched pretty well in AAA. Let's see what you've got, kid. And, you know, kind of force Luno to make a decision. And so, you know, Josh James was terrible, but it's a long list of pitchers that look really bad in Colorado. So I'm not going to put a whole lot of stock into looking at box scores or, you know, how does this performance affect their standing in the roster. I mean, when you go to Colorado, you sort of know what you're going to get.
James, the Astros are sending six players to the All-Star game there at Progressive Field in Cleveland next week. You had your three starters, which we talked about last time, with Springer, Brantley, and Bregman getting the start. And now they're also going to be sending Verlander, Cole, and Presley. I mentioned it on the air the other day. This is the third All-Star game selection for Gerrit Cole. Is he underrated?
I think so. You know, I think when he was the staff ace, in Pittsburgh, it was Pittsburgh. And then, you know, he sort of came in and it's sort of Verlander's staff. And so, you know, it's Verlander Cole. I don't think anyone who has to face him underrates him, but I think Verlander sort of steals the spotlight when you think about the Astros rotation. So is he underrated, not by the players, but by fans? That maybe so.
Yeah. It seems like he has the respect, obviously, of his peers. But when you think of one of the best pitchers in either league or in the league overall, you typically his name does not spring to mind, but yet here he is with a third All-Star game selection. So it's just kind of interesting. He's sneaky good, I guess would be the best way to kind of describe him. James, we've talked about it before. Do you think that the Astros are going to make a move to bolster their rotation by the trade deadline?
I think they have to, you know, because Whitley, you know, the guys that I think they sort of, I think we talked about this last week, the pitching depth that they had maybe plotted out on paper at the beginning of the season isn't there anymore. Whitley's hurt. Corbin Martin is, apparently pretty seriously hurt. J.D. Bukauskas isn't exactly overwhelming anybody in Corpus. And so you've got Verlander, Cole, and Miley, and then you're just trying to piece together those last two spots. And so I think the Astros know, you know, this is their last guaranteed year with Verlander and Cole at the top of the rotation. They're going to have to go for it. And I want them to. I've in the past had prospect attachment syndrome where I have not wanted to trade prospects. And then, you know, get that World Series. And now I'm like, I don't care. Trade the entire Corpus roster for Mike Trout. I don't whatever you have to do to get another World Series, do it.
Talking with James Yasko here at the Lehman Time podcast on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, how much of a threat are the Texas Rangers to the Houston Astros?
About as much of a threat as trying to put your socks on while you're standing up. They're not. I mean, you have I think there's a greater risk of falling over and knocking yourself out on the coffee table than the Rangers. What they've done is fine. You know, good for them. Good for their fans to have a little bit of hope. I don't like that they have hope, and I hope that hope is extinguished as soon as humanly possible. But you know, I have some. You know, excuse me, that got away from me. I have some Rangers fan friends, which is kind of what you say when, you know, when you're about to say something mean. I know they were all climbing over me. Like, oh, we're only 4.5 back. Well, you know, 3 days later, now you're 7.5 back and you're in third place. So, good. I'm happy that they have a taste of happiness, I guess. And, they can stay happy, you know, in October when they're playing golf.
Oh, wow. Spoken like a diehard Astros fan, and I love it. James, appreciate you coming on early for us, brother. Enjoy the 4th of July holiday weekend, and you have a great time, my man.
Hey, you too. Thanks a lot.
James Yasko joining us there from the Lehman Time podcast, courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number two here of RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. About to put a bow on hour number two on today's show. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. Free over the air, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. Coming up in hour number three, we'll be talking to our good friend, the Dean Kane of all of Acadiana sports media, George Faust. He was there last night for the prayer vigil for a long time. Raging Cajun baseball coach Tony Robichaux will get his insight on what he saw and experienced there last night at Russo Park. That'll be coming up at 8:32. And we'll also be in hour number three talking a little Zion Williamson as he prepares for summer league play out in Las Vegas. But I want to wrap up hour number two, how we started hour number one, with the Women's World Cup. Team USA pulls out the 2-1 victory over England. Alex Morgan throws some great shade with her celebration as she sipped on a cup of imaginary tea while holding out the pinky finger. And now they advance to the championship round. They will face the winner of the Netherlands versus Sweden. The championship match for this year's Women's World Cup will be on Sunday.
That's so great for me. I'm that guy on Sunday mornings when I wake up, I don't know what to do with myself because there's no football right now. You know, Sunday mornings for me are wake up, whatever little thing I need to get done ahead of time, if there is anything, get that done, and then make sure your butt's on the couch by noon so you can watch some football. I haven't had, you know, and nobody's had that in quite a while now. So it's going to be nice this Sunday being able to, and admittedly, for the last few Sundays I've been doing this. It just hasn't always been the United States game. I watch like an England, some other country game on a Sunday morning. So I am very excited about being able to wake up Sunday and sports being on my television.
I want to give you the opportunity here, Cody Schutz, to talk about your expectations for the championship match. What are your expectations for the championship match?
I think the championship match is, depending on who they face, I think Sweden will be an easier opponent than the Netherlands. And I don't know which team is going to come out of this other game, Sweden or the Dutch. I have no idea.
So you're not worried at all because Team USA has already defeated Sweden. But Sweden is familiar with them now. You're not worried about a second time around knowing exactly what Team USA is going to do?
No, because you don't. Because Team USA has changed their lineup so much. Their starting 11 hasn't necessarily been the same for any game. So it's one of the in soccer is one of those things where it's a team sport. But even though it's a team sport, you're doing a lot of one on ones. It's similar to basketball in a sense, and there are just better soccer players for the United States than there are on Sweden's team. And that's no knock to Sweden. The United States is the best team in the world.
Fair point. Fair point. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We've got Chad on the line. Good morning to you, Chad. How are you?
Doing well, guy. Happy 4th of July to y'all, man. Y'all have a safe and happy holiday weekend. But, man, I want to say if y'all kind of bored, man, if y'all want to watch baseball in its purest form, we've got the Broussard Elite playing at Broussard to go to the World Series this weekend starting tomorrow. The championship game runs through Sunday. Just a bunch of baseball teams and just playing for the love of the game, man, at that age, man. AG baseball and some really good baseball, maybe some future stars. But if y'all get a chance, man, this starting tomorrow through Sunday, man, baseball in its purest form. Go out there, watch those kids play ball, man.
Where's it at, Chad?
This is at Broussard Park.
Broussard Park.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Well,
yeah, they are planning to go to the World Series, and which will be held at Youngsville. But just a bunch of teams there, man, just playing for the love of the game, man. And it gets a little feisty at some time.
Yeah.
So,
hey, I can relate. As the head coach of the Pointe-Coupee Rec Cubbies, I can relate to how it gets a little fired up sometimes around the rec league ballparks, man.
Does it get fired up, man? it's a great time. And just maybe you'll see some future stars out there playing, man. But anyway, guys, y'all have a blessed and happy 4th of July. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, Chad. Appreciate the phone call. And yeah, if you want to go see some youth baseball,
that's great. Is there anything more American than that? Go and check out a little youth league baseball with a spot in the Little League, not the Little League World Series, but still a World Series spot on the line for these kids on America's birthday weekend. I mean, that right there, grab yourself a hot dog, a slice of apple pie, and have yourselves a day.
That sounds like a day.
It does, really. I'm excited.
That sounds like a good day. I appreciate Chad letting us know about it.
And I believe that came up on Sport of Politics last week. There's a lot of baseball in this new, the Broussard Park is nice, and then the new Youngsville Park as well with everything out there. They're bringing, I believe there's a Pony League World Series.
Yeah, and anytime you have a nice facility like that, you're always going to host these either state tournaments or even regional tournaments like this.
And then that's always a good thing for the economy. People are staying in the hotels. People are buying food at the restaurants.
That's a good thing.
All good things.
All good things. So, yeah, if you get a chance, you love baseball in its purest form, as Chad said, go out to Broussard Park, check out some youth baseball on 4th of July. Buy yourself a hot dog. I go to the ballpark.
If you're a parent that used to have kids that played baseball and maybe now you're an empty nester, this has got to intrigue you a little bit. You've got to miss those weekends in the ballpark just watching kids play.
Probably.
I do.
Yes. But you're still coaching, though.
Yeah, but it's different. It's different than when you're out there for an entire day watching my little brother play, and then we go stay in a hotel, and then we go back and play again. It's that whole experience.
Hour two in the books. Final hour of today's show coming up. We'll be talking about Zion Williamson, about to make his summer league debut right here on Acadiana Sports Station.
And local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on. See that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage, free, over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Chad called us in the last break. Gave us a little update about some youth baseball going on starting tomorrow on the actual 4th of July. Youth baseball World Series bid is on the line out there at Broussard Park. So if you want to support local sports or you just have a love for baseball in its purest form, with the little kids playing, go out there. Have a good time at the ballpark starting tomorrow. Coming up this hour, 8:32, we'll have from KLFY, George Faust. He'll give us his insight, what he saw firsthand there at the prayer vigil for UL baseball coach Tony Robichaux that was held last night at Russo Park. So we'll talk with George about that coming up at 8:32. We spent a good portion of today's show talking about the U.S. women's soccer team pulling out the win over England to advance to the championship match on Sunday. Cody Schutz will give us his prediction and more insight later in today's show. So you got to make sure to stay tuned for that. But right now I want to talk a little Zion Williamson, the big fella.
I'm going to start a hand signal for Zion. You make the Z. Have you seen Dude Where's My Car?
Yes, I've seen Dude.
Zoltan. We're going to do that, except for Zion.
I was not ready for the Dude Where's My Car reference on the 4th of July Eve. I was not ready.
That's your fault. That's your fault for not being ready for that.
It is my fault for not being ready for the Dude Where's My Car reference. Zion will be.
And then.
Zion will be making his summer league debut this weekend. The team is already in Vegas. That's where they host all the summer league games. And Zion, look, do I anticipate the Pels' number one overall pick playing a lot in the summer league? No, I do not. You're not going to have the big fella out there, and you're not going to wear him down during the summer league. He's your prized draft pick. He's going to be the face of your franchise. You'll probably have him play in the Pelicans' summer league opener, which I do believe is going to be nationally broadcast.
I know the game's on Friday. I don't know about a national broadcast, but I believe the first game's Friday.
Okay, and if that is, then I think the Friday game, we'll get the times on that, but I do believe that the Friday game will be televised because that'll give the NBA its opportunity to show everyone Zion Williamson as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans for the first time.
Yeah, the tip-off for the first game for the Pelicans Summer League, Friday, 6:30 against the Knicks on the four-letter network. Get this, just in case Zion doesn't play in that very first game on Friday, July 5th, the Pelicans will also be on the four-letter network Saturday, July 6th at 7 p.m. playing the Wizards. So back-to-back.
I'm sure those decisions were made before Zion Williamson.
Right. The schedule's been made.
That's been made. That's been in place for months. ESPN was very much intrigued about what the New Orleans Pelicans were going to be doing. Yeah.
Then they play a game on July 8th on NBA TV, and then they will play their final game of the Summer League on July 10th, and that'll be on the Deuce.
Don't be surprised if after this weekend you don't see Zion Williamson play another Summer League game. Because if I'm the Pels, I'm not wearing him out. You just want to see what he can do. He can get some reps, start developing a rapport with his new teammates. I would anticipate him not being used a ton during the summer league. He should get some significant minutes, though, on Friday when they take on the Knicks and he gets to face his former teammate, R.J. Barrett, who was the number three overall pick selected by the Metropolitans.
If I had to make a...
Yes, I am... that was not a slip of the tongue. I'm going to refer to the Knicks...
The Knickerbockers.
Moving forward, I'm going to refer to them as the dysfunctional baseball team they share a city with.
That's true.
The Mets.
If I
they are a dumpster fire. The Knicks are a dumpster fire. So I'm just going to combine them. I'm just going to call them both the Metropolitans until one of them proves that they deserve to be referred to as their actual nickname.
We're just going to take your name and give it to you. Now you both have the same name.
You both have the same color scheme. They both have the orange and the blue.
There you go. You're not wrong. If I had to make a prediction about playing time or action on the court for Zion Williamson, I expect him, like you said, obviously, to play on the 5th. I wouldn't be surprised, looking at this schedule, if Zion didn't play in games 1, 2, and 4. I could see him.
Really?
I could see him sitting out that, or just playing very little in that Bulls game because of NBA TV, and it's not on national television. But I could see the NBA kind of pressuring, not pressuring, but pushing the Pelicans to play Zion as much as they can. And as long as he doesn't get hurt, which you never know, it could happen at any time. It's beneficial for Zion to be out there, I think. And the Pelicans, don't get me wrong, they could use a little national exposure. They've gotten more national exposure with this draft than they've gotten ever in the history of the franchise, I might go out on a limb and say. But with Zion now finally in a Pelicans uniform, I think they're going to want to get him out there as much as possible to start establishing the fact that, you know, this kid is the dude and New Orleans is going to ride with him.
Do you realize that we're actually talking about watching Pel's Summer League basketball?
Oh, my goodness.
You know why we are doing that? Because we finally have people in place in the front office in Metairie that actually draft people and have a reason to have rookies play.
They cracked the code, finally, huh?
David Griffin's like,
wait a minute.
Hold on here. Hold on here. So they're going to hire me, and the only thing I really need to do is actually draft players? Say what? What? Amazing how this works out, and you build up momentum for your franchise because you have people talking about the NBA during the offseason for Summer League, and people in the state of Louisiana and New Orleans and the Gulf Coast are excited to see Zion Williamson make his television debut on Friday night in a damn Summer League game. Stunning how that works. Stunning. I mean, Griff is a genius. Make no doubt about it, okay? Man is an absolute genius. A basketball front office savant, for sure. But come on, man. We've been deprived of this. We have no idea. Pelicans fans don't know how to react. They're like, are we supposed to watch Summer League games? I don't understand. What is this about? We can actually, there's basketball past the NBA Finals? Zion did meet with the media yesterday, gearing up for making his Summer League debut this Friday. And the young man, he's only 19 years old. He's still a baby. He was asked about what adjustments he's going to have to make from the college game to playing in the association.
I do like the spacing a lot more. You can't really just stand in the paint, so it gives me a lot of room to operate. And the defense is a little different as well, because I'm used to always helping and being over, but can't really do that in this league, so I'm just adjusting to that.
Making the adjustment, it will be, look, as naturally gifted as he is, he's a phenomenal talent. I'm letting everyone know now, Pels fans, you're going to have to be patient with the big fella. He's got the right mindset. He's going to be a hard worker. Most of those guys that come through Duke are that. But he's going to have some high peaks this year as a rookie, but there are going to be some low valleys. There are going to be some nights where he gets into foul trouble and he's single digits in scoring. You're going to have to be patient with the big fella. He can be the face of this franchise. He can be a generational talent. But there is a learning curve for guys, regardless of how talented they are. Kobe Bryant came into the league and shot air balls in actual games. It took him a couple years to get to becoming the Mamba. It took LeBron James, as probably the most naturally gifted basketball player ever, it took him a couple years to really kind of grow, and he had bad games those first couple years. Every superstar athlete, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, it does not matter. Name them. It takes time. They will have low points. You just got to be patient with the young man because he will have those. He did say something interesting about spacing on the floor, though, that I want to get to. And he talked about how, in particular, the three-point line in the NBA helps create space, and the big, powerful power forward loves playing in that space.
Yeah, the three-point line does create more spacing because, you know, everybody can shoot, so you can't really help off too much otherwise. So open three. So, yeah, I love the spacing. Like, it's almost like a dream come true for me. So every time I take the basket, there's space for me.
And the number one overall pick by the New Orleans Pelicans, and now the face of the franchise, did say something interesting, though. So we talk about how he's such a great jumper and that he plays so high above the rim, right? We think about the powerful dunks of Zion Williamson when we think about his career at Duke. But the big fella says, you know what? He's not getting enough love for what he can do down in the low post.
I think I don't get enough credit for my low post game. I can't attack off the wing. I can't attack from up top. But, you know, in college, it's a little different because everybody can help over. But in the NBA, they can help over, but not really. So I'm able to show more of my skill in the post.
So he's got skills that he's ready to show off. I love that. I love those Duke guys, Coach K guys, they're always very disciplined and hard workers. But you ever notice, Cody, they always have kind of a chip on their shoulder a little bit too? There's always just that slight chip on their shoulder where they're like, hey, you know what? My low post game's good too. Zion's already coming into summer league telling you, yeah, my low post game's pretty good too. I got to show that off, which I love. I love that little bit of that chip, that edge. If you're going to be great in any sport, you got to have an edge. And sometimes you make up slights towards you to give yourself an edge. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady have been doing it in the NFL for a decade plus. Tom Brady is still mad about being a six-round draft pick. He's still angry about that. That still gives him an edge. When someone stupid, who was it stupidly said Tom Brady was only the ninth best quarterback in the NFL recently? Probably on the mothership, one of those stations.
Sounds like a Stephen A. thing.
That sounds like a Max Kellerman thing, doesn't it?
Skip Bayless.
It was like, oh, Kellerman, you were so good for boxing. And it's just, well, what are you doing? You got to follow that money, I guess. But, you know, anytime that something gets said like that, you know, Tom Brady takes that and goes, boom, that's me. I'm taking that. I'm making that my motivation. Zion Williamson has a little bit of that in him, which I love to see from the young man. So summer league play is going to begin for Zion and the Baby Pels this Friday out in Vegas. Once again, I don't know how much we're going to see from the big fella, but it'll be definitely interesting to see him rocking a Pels jersey. A bit, it'll be a summer league jersey, but still. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Zion moving forward. Can't wait, though. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll keep the NBA talk going. Some free agency updates. No, Kawhi has still not made his decision, but others have. And one team in the West, oh boy, they're stacking chips, and they sure do look like they're going to make a run for a title next year. We'll talk more about that when we come back right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. As the Pels gear up for summer league play, they make their debut on Friday. They're in Las Vegas. NBA free agency is still going strong. Now, we've had both Andrew Lopez from NOLA.com and Les East from CrescentCitySports.com on this week, and they both say that they expect the Pels to make maybe another move. It'll be a minor move, possibly trading Etuan Moore to someone to maybe get another big in return or possibly a backup point guard because they really, truly don't have a backup point guard right now. It could be Frank Jackson, but I still think they're going to make another move, bring in another veteran guy to back up Lonzo Ball at the point. They got a slew of guys at the two spot to back up Drew Holiday, Josh Hart, the young kid that they took out of Vitek, and others. So they're set there. So the Pels are still making moves. That said, the rest of the NBA is still being aggressive in free agency. No rumblings yet on Kawhi Leonard. He has yet to make a decision. And it's interesting that the biggest free agent on the market, not named Kevin Durant, still has yet to pick a team. It's interesting to me. It's also interesting to me that Boogie Cousins, reports are coming out that there's not a market out there for Boogie Cousins. Not a market for one of the best big guys in the league? I understand he was not himself this year for the Golden State Warriors, coming off the Achilles injury that he suffered when he was with a member of the Pelicans. But he was voted as an All-Star Game starter and then got injured. Guy's a double-double machine. I know he's not the best defensive player, and I know you have to deal sometimes with what's been classified at best as moodiness. But are you telling me that there's no one out there that could use the big fella like that? Reports are coming out that there's no market for DeMarcus Cousins, who just got wrapped up with his one-year deal with the Golden State Warriors, and now he's a free agent again. Not for sure I believe that. Someone will make a run at him. That's for sure. But I don't think he's going to go back to Boston. I don't think he's going to go back to Golden State, because the Warriors signed free agent center Willie Cauley-Stein from the Sacramento Kings. The mothership's Zach Lowe confirmed those reports yesterday. So it looks like they're moving on without Boogie Cousins. So where will Boogie land? Could he be landing with a contender? Don't be surprised if you see Boogie Cousins end up playing for the Lakers, because that sounds exactly like the type of move that they would do. They miss out on some of the other bigger names, so why not go after him? Another big move, kind of under the radar move, free agent Jeff Green, veteran player, champion. He signs a one-year, $2.5 million deal with the Utah Jazz, who just keep stockpiling players. The Jazz also signed Emmanuel Mudiay to a one-year deal. So they're building up their bench. They're building up their depth. They're going to try to flex their muscles and be the best team in the Western Conference next year. Keep an eye out on the Jazz. The Lakers did make a move yesterday. They signed free agent Jared Dudley to a one-year, $2.6 million deal. So now the Lakers have five people on their roster. Congratulations. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, Jared Dudley, and I think there's someone else I forgot that they signed. Because you can win an NBA championship with five players on the roster.
I saw a meme on Twitter about Jared Dudley joining the Lakers and saying that obviously this was a move because Jared Dudley is going to be in Space Jam 2. The meme was Jared Dudley's mugshot right next to the Elmer Fudd, the hunter.
Oh, nice.
They look exactly the same. It's hilarious. Go find it. Jared Dudley, Elmer Fudd. Funny stuff.
So he signs a $2.6 million deal. So LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kyle Kuzma, and now they have Jared Dudley. I'm sorry, they only have four players. Their roster is so depleted, they only have four players. And they're just banking on Kawhi Leonard coming there in free agency.
They're going to go with the Hoosiers approach. My team is on the court. Coach, you only got three. My team is on the court.
Yeah, my team, Hoosiers approach. Oh, I'm sorry. They have five players. Troy Daniels. I'm not even going to sit here and pretend like I know who the hell Troy Daniels is. I'm sure he's a tremendous young man.
It's like a poor man Chris Humphreys.
Has come to an agreement to a one-year, $2.1 million deal with the Lakers. So they're building up a championship roster. Sure. So we don't know what happens with Kawhi Leonard, but the one I really want to talk about of all the free agent moves yesterday. And, Cody, I need you to go online and look up the career stats of Ben Simmons for me, please. Because the Philadelphia 76ers have reportedly offered a 5-year max deal worth $170 million to Ben Simmons.
I think I know your question, and if I do know your question, you already know the answer.
He's never made a three-pointer, right?
He is 0%.
So in the modern NBA, which is dependent solely on the three-point shot, the Golden State Warriors were built around three-point shooters. Everyone in the NBA has based their teams on three-point shooting, and the 76ers are like, hold up. We want to have nothing but bigs on there because we brought in Al Horford and re-signed Tobias Harris. And we let J.J. Redick walk in free agency to the Pels and let Jimmy Butler be traded to the Heat. And we're going to sign a guy who's never made a three-pointer in his professional career and give him $170 million.
That's a thing that happened.
The 76ers are about to be back to being the old 76ers real quick-like. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to George Faust from KLFY right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Sweet.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast, of course, on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of over-the-air, free over-the-air sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Programming reminder, ladies and gentlemen, we will be off tomorrow to celebrate the 4th of July holiday, but we'll be back on the airwaves Friday, July the 5th, with best of shows. That's right, there'll be a best of show for RP3 and Company. You'll hear the very best of Cody and I, best of show for the Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4, and then a best of show on Friday with Bumper to Bumper Sports. That'll be between 4 and 6:30 because we'll have Angels at Astros pregame starting at 6:30, first pitch at 7:10 on Friday. That'll begin the three-game set between the Stros and the Halos this weekend. Coming up later today, Jordy Holberg Show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4, Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 6, and then you'll have Five Guys, Stories, and Lies from 6 to 7:10. That's right, Don Allen, Glenn Quibido, Bruce Brown, Tom Brown, and of course, St. Landry Parish legend Bobby Ardwin will be in here giving each other a little hell, but also telling terrific stories and giving you unfiltered commentary the only way they can. That'll be from 6 to 7:10, Five Guys Stories and Lies tonight. And they'll lead you right into Astros, no pregame show. They'll lead you right into first pitch at 7:10 as the Astros wrap up their two-game stand there against the Colorado Rockies tonight. We are efforting getting the Dean Cain, Dean King, Prince, Joker, of all of Acadiana sports media, George Faust, on the line to talk about the prayer vigil and rosary that was held last night at Russo Park for longtime head baseball coach Tony Robichaud for the Raging Cajuns. Hundreds of people showed up. It's tremendous seeing that kind of support for a longtime fixture in the community that tells you everything that you need to know about his impact and what he brings to the table and how people feel about him, his former players, parents of former players, boosters, supporters of the university, and just people in Lafayette and Acadiana in general. He does need your prayers. He does need your good wishes. Once again, he's had two surgeries since suffering the heart attack 2 weeks ago this coming Sunday. He's currently down in critical condition down at Ochsner in New Orleans after having his second surgery following the heart attack that he had. Since we got a little time, though, I want to dive deeper into the World Cup. We talked about that as well earlier on today's show. Women's World Cup. The women's team wins 2-1, defeats England, advances to the title match. Cody, I made things complicated. You weren't prepared for your boy coming in with the strong Women's World Cup take to start off today's show.
Mm-hmm.
I usually allow you to be the man on the floor, to be the man in the spotlight when it comes to Women's World Cup discussion. And I stole that away from you earlier today. I apologize. That's no way to head into the 4th of July holiday, but I was very excited. I had my patriotism flying because of the Women's World Cup and the women's national team. Right. So I want to give you an opportunity now. The floor is yours. Give us your breakdown of what occurred yesterday with Team USA versus England. I want your thoughts, unfiltered thoughts, about Alex Morgan's celebration. And then move us forward to the championship match. Everything on the line Sunday.
One word to describe, if I'm going to play that game, one word to describe yesterday's match between USA and England was chippy. And I'm not even sure if chippy is an actual word, but you know what I mean. There were a lot of like little ticky-tack things, and that happens in any soccer game. People, you know, little elbows to the kidney or, a knee to the back of your leg or to the thigh. Or these things happen. But it seemed to be happening a lot in the game yesterday. The United States comes out and scores an incredible goal to open up the game there on a great cross, just buried in the back of the net by, an interesting fact, the girl Christian Press, who scored the first goal for the United States, was only on the field because she was replacing Megan Rapinoe. So it was good to see her, and I think that was good for the team as well to see, oh, okay, the girl that we have in here replacing, who is probably our best player, just put one in the back of the net for us. We're going to be all right. You know, and so that gave the United States, I think, that sense of confidence early on in the game. But then England came right back and scored a good, good goal. It was
like 4 or 5 minutes later, right?
It was pretty quick afterwards. After the goal, excuse me. And you can't take anything away from England's goal. It was just one of those, when it went in the back of the net, I was like, well, you know, you got to cover that girl. She buried it too. So it was a good game all the way through. When, of course, the game, you know, USA scores again, another goal. Alex Morgan gets her goal.
USA.
Yes. My feelings on the celebration are there. It's fine. I mean, I haven't heard or seen too many complaints about this particular celebration, which is a good thing because it's national relevance. You can't dog on a team, you know, nationally. It's hard to dog, like I said earlier, it's hard to dog on the United States in that way. What would you call for the United States in order to make fun of them? Everyone knows England is with T, and so that's the fun. To me, I'm good to go. I have no issues with it whatsoever. I think it's a great celebration. I thought it was hilarious. And in that situation where you just put your team back ahead in the semifinals of the World Cup, celebrate all you want. The moment of the match, though, goes to the keeper for the United States, Alyssa Nair, she finally had, and it was fun to hear Alexi Lawless got a little emotional after the game when he was breaking down because of Alyssa Nair having her World Cup moment. Even though it wasn't in the finals, it wasn't in the championship game, she still had her World Cup moment to put USA over the top, and that got me kind of, you know, not emotional, but a little like good for her. You know, I'd give a little hand clap.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting in my living room for her.
Because she will always be remembered for that.
Yes. And following Brianna Scurry and then Hope Solo in goal for the United States women is, those are the biggest shoes to fill probably. Oh. And so she's done a very, very incredibly good job of that. And she deserves all the praise in the world. My prediction for the final, I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going to go right down. I'm going to stay right where I was at. I think I've been saying this for weeks now, for matches now. This is now their toughest opponent. This is now United States.
Yeah, it was Spain, and then it was France,
right,
and then it was England.
I'm not going to say that this time. I think their next game is going to be a bit of a step down. Now, granted, it's the top competition in the world. It's the finals of the World Cup. But I think talent-wise, Sweden or the Netherlands isn't as good as England. I'm going to go, because I was a little off. I said 3-1 for yesterday. It ended up being 2-1. I'm going to go with 3-1 again in the final. I think United States wins.
You stole my thunder. That was my pick.
Was it really?
That's my prediction.
I mean, it's soccer. It's hard to, you know, it's differential scores.
I mean, I could be a total patriotic homer and say it's going to be 17-1 or something crazy like that, and that the Americans just bookend their World Cup with another dominating performance and celebrate every goal like it's their first. Take that, world.
And I do need to give a shout-out. The men's national team plays tonight at 8:30, I believe, is kickoff of that game, if you're interested in a little more U.S. soccer.
I'm interested in championship-caliber soccer. I give the men hell. I know. They just don't have the infrastructure in place to develop talent like the women's team does. Maybe they should pay the women more. I don't know. That's a discussion for another day. Well, now we're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as our efforting paid off, as we do have the king of all of Acadiana sports media, the one and only KFY Sports Director, George Faust, is joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Fausty, appreciate you making some time for us, brother. How are you today?
My apologies, man. I was separated from my phone.
I like that. I was separated from my phone. I like that. As someone who has small ones living in his house, sometimes your phone, you do get separated from it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Good morning, man. How you doing?
Morning. Doing good, Fausty. Happy 4th of July to you, brother. But I wanted to bring you on just briefly here because I know you were out there last night at Russo Park for the prayer vigil and rosary that was had for Coach Tony Robichaud, the longtime head baseball coach of the Raging Cajuns. Just your thoughts and emotions that you saw on hand last night for the prayer vigil there at Russo Park.
Right. Very touching and just kind of trying to uplift everybody. They said the rosary. They had a couple of prayers, and they read a note from the family, a letter from the family to the fans, and you know, very somber, but also there were some lighthearted moments and some applause after one of the pastors was talking about how Coach was able to, you know, what kind of person Coach is, very very moving and touching, and what you would expect for a prayer service and a rosary ceremony. It's difficult to talk about because, you know, not the event, but just the whole situation, because there's so much that's going into it, and Coach is still struggling, and it's definitely puts you at a kind of a standstill, because, you know, it's one thing when, you know, you see somebody from afar and you don't have much contact with them, they have a situation, and you're like, oh, that's sad, you know. But then it's a whole completely other situation when, you know, you deal with somebody on a regular basis, and you enjoy talking to them and enjoy their company, and they impart knowledge, and you kind of turn to them for, you know, different types of advice and things of that nature, and something happens. And that's the way I feel. The Thursday before he had his heart attack, he was doing a segment for us on Inside Cajun Nation, and so I've been wrestling with that thought, and that, like, that, you know, that, holy cow, you know, this is the last time he was able to speak to the public before his heart attack. And so that for me has been my struggle in trying to make sure I represent him right, you know, with regards to what the message is that he always wanted to put out. So yeah, it was very touching last night, and good to be there, and I was glad I had an opportunity to be there. A lot of hugs, a lot of tears, all that with the hope that in some way, shape, or form, his condition will turn for a better situation I'm not sure what the situation is at the moment, but yeah, we're all hoping for something positive to happen.
We're talking with George Faust, sports director of KFY, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Fausty, hundreds of people showed up last night. As someone who's been an institution here in the area in sports media, you weren't surprised by the turnout at all, were you?
No, no. That's exactly what you would have expected. People just – because, in fact, I had a chance to interview some of the people that were there, and they were like, you know, you can't do a whole lot. There's not a whole lot you can pray, and you can gather and discuss and talk to each other, but it's not like a situation where you can control the situation, you can control what happens, and so you just have to pray and hope and comfort each other in this time, and I think that's a lot of what was happening last night, the turnout was especially for such a quick. It was a quick notice, you know. It was like a couple, maybe a day and a half of getting the word out that there was going to be a prayer service. And, yeah, the people turned out. And a lot of people were, like one guy I talked to, he said, Coach Robes coached my kids a long time. Like, my kids are grown now, but he coached them when they were, you know, a little bit younger. I think he said American Legion ball. So, I don't know if that, you know, but so he had a chance to meet Coach through that. And I mean, when you think about it, as a coach, you affect so many people's lives and you may not even realize that you're affecting somebody's life in a positive way. Or more times than not, it's in a positive way. And that's what the message was basically from all the people, or most of the people that I talked with at the event last night.
Talking with George Faust of KLFY here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Faust, Dr. Brian Maggard addressed the crowd last night and said that, you know, they can't wait to see Coach Rowe back there coaching the team, leading the baseball program once again. You know, if he makes a full recovery, do you see that happening, that he'll be back coaching the baseball team, or do you think this could possibly have him kind of reconsider being a baseball coach and just maybe taking a year off and focusing on his health more than anything?
Well, it's hard to imagine him not being able to coach if he's able to make a full recovery, but that recovery process would be a long time. And so, I don't have, like, does he, would he have the fire and the desire to do it? I think, yeah. It might have to, terms, you know, the situation might dictate it more than his want to be able to be the coach. You know what I mean? Like, so while he probably, I don't think he, if you're asking me if I think he'd retire, I don't think he'd do that quite yet if he was able to make a full recovery if that happened. I think he would still, maybe there'd be an interim coach, and then he would come back if he was healthy enough after that. That's probably, circumstance might dictate differently. You understand? You know, I mean, like,
right.
He might not be able to coach. Yeah, it might be like the doctor saying, if he ends up making a full recovery, then the doctor's going to be like, you know, that's too much stress. You know, you can't put your body through that again. So, does he want to? Thursday before he had the heart attack, I spent 2 hours with him. We chatted for an hour and 30 minutes. That was not on TV. Like, that was just talking about life and talking about he was talking about his grandson. I was talking about my son. They played ball together. They played ball together on all-star teams and things of that nature. So yeah, I think the want for him to be able to coach is definitely going to be there, you know, with a full recovery. I don't know if the circumstance can dictate that. You know what I mean? It might be just too much, and so he might not have a choice on whether or not he's going to be back. I mean, he'll be the guy leading the team I don't think they're not going to put ask him to leave. It'll be up to him, I'm sure. But I think the circumstance will dictate that more than anything else.
Fausti, appreciate you making time out for us as always, my friend. Happy 4th of July to you and your family, and enjoy the holiday Thank weekend. You. And we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Sounds good. Thank you, man. Good, always good to be with you.
It's George Faust, sports director at KLFY, joining us, giving us his insight from last night's prayer vigil for Tony Robichaud there held at Russo Park. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I want to thank our guest today, James Yasko from the Lima Time podcast. I also want to thank George Faust from KLFY making some time for us. Reminder, tomorrow we're off for the 4th of July holiday. On Friday, it'll be a best of show, the very best of RP3 and Company, as well as the very best of the Jordy Holberg Show and Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we'll be live back on the air Monday. Cody, what you got planned for this holiday weekend?
Some fireworks and a trip to the Paragon.
My man's got it mapped out, living his best version of his life. Y'all be safe out there. Be safe with the fireworks. Be safe with the celebrating the 4th of July. You know what I mean. I don't have to spell it out for you. Just have a great holiday weekend. Be safe out there. And we'll talk to you guys back live in the studio on Monday.